All right, welcome to In Plain Sight, Jeremy in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate, send the fundage, make your check or money order payable to RBN 2251, Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call your debit or credit card into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Julie said she'll be glad to take any donations of $1,000, $5,000, or $1 or $5, whatever suits your checkbook. This is the Tuesday Night Patrick and Jeremy Show, Part 1. Joining me from some underground bunker somewhere broadcasting, I'm sure he's been out fighting crime today and analyzing political science, Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm fine, and I have been analyzing political science, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's
trying to fight crime.
It's important that we have this platform. You know, we've asked the question to Warren Baylog, you know, and it's been asked on Stormfront. We're going to talk about this. What are we going to do about it? I mean, keeping all of us networked and developing a political narrative to combat the false narrative of the Jewish dominated elite. I think that's very important. It was important during COVID because, you know, in the first couple of days or weeks of the alleged COVID virus, we didn't know what was going on. And it took us a while. It took a lot of networking. It took a lot of research and talking to one another. And this network was key in developing a narrative to combat their narrative. And it helped out later on. I spoke at school boards. Parents all over Kentucky were outraged at school boards. And we got legislation passed. You know, you want to rally a group of people together, you got to have a convincing narrative to put forth to them, because the average person is just ignorant and can't put all this stuff together. And that's sort of our job, I guess. What do you think of that analysis?
No, I think that's right. Mentioning COVID, so many people still don't know what's going on. You had Just within the past week, Mark Zuckerberg was on, what's the guy's name? Friedman, something Friedman, Lex Friedman, who's a Russian or Ukrainian Jew who came to America and somehow got a big deal podcast. And Mark Zuckerberg was complaining. You know, and I don't know what his voluntary level of compliance with the censorship regime was, but he was complaining that Facebook had been under all this pressure to remove voices expressing opinions that, in retrospect, were, he said, I think, debatable or true. Right, they had to be repressed as misinformation, and in retrospect, at least some of it was true. And yet, I mean, around America, around the world, there's still millions and millions of people who are wearing masks. And this is just one issue, the coronavirus and the masking, and people aren't arriving at the truth. There's still these insane narratives out there, whether you're talking about the coronavirus, whether you're talking about white supremacy, all sorts of things, which people are exposed to, like these crazy ideas people are exposed to through the mainstream as part of an attack by the elite on the population. So RBN has a very, very vital role to play. So that's what I say.
And I would argue too that the same people wearing masks are the same ones that are going in for the whole anti-white narrative. And that's what CRT really is, anti-white. And finally we're getting the mainstream to sort of call it that, because, you know, broadcasts like this and many others, like on TRS and David Duke, we pushed that envelope, and we're getting them to refer to this as an anti-white narrative instead of just CRT. So in the same way that we developed a narrative through networking and we got thousands and thousands of people across the nation, you know, to push back on the COVID, I think we could do the same thing with the pushback on Jewish power and the anti-white narrative. And as our cities and more liberal states start to degenerate, start to become even more degenerate because of mass third world immigration and just this half of the population that's going to go along with it that's probably never going to come around, you know, as that happens, we're going to have to rally people to, you know, defend what we have. There could be a point where we rally under our sheriffs and local law enforcement and conservative areas, not only to form a political defense, but an actual defense, Second Amendment tier. That could be a thing. That's in a South African, you know, style government that could very well happen in some of these big cities.
Well, who knows? Who knows? If you try to look a few years down the road, it's really difficult to know what to expect at this point. Internationally, there is. I think there's a collapse of Jewish power internationally as a result of this war in Ukraine. You're having a realignment of the world around a Beijing-Moscow axis. The dollar will be increasingly irrelevant. You're seeing international trade being conducted in other currencies, and countries are going to be reluctant to keep their foreign currency reserves in dollars. They're going to be reluctant to buy treasuries after having seen the sanctions that were applied to Russia over this. You know, the fake idea that Russia is attacked Ukraine as some sort of means of reestablishing its old empire when it was cornered into an attack through years and years Ukraine. In the case of Ukraine, you had the 2014 coup. Why did nobody complain about the 2014 coup where effectively NATO the Jewish State Department takes over Ukraine? That was fine. And then Ukraine attacks ethnic Russians within the old borders of Ukraine, and that was fine. But if the ethnic Russians in Ukraine don't want to be attacked, and want to join Russia for their own self-defense, then that's wrong. There's a lot that's crazy out there. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, we've got a presidential election campaign that is going to transpire over the next 17 months. Lots of stuff happens in presidential election campaigns. We're going to have another disputed election. I mean, the election will be disputed. The 2016 election was heavily disputed, and 2020, it's going to be a very disputed election. How many disputed presidential elections can we have before there is so little faith in the legitimacy of American political institutions that everything falls apart? There's a question.
Yeah, fall apart indeed it is, and it will. And you know, we talk about this divide in America. The mask wearers, the COVID believers, tend to be the anti-white, the genuflect to Jewish power. And this is mostly on the left, but increasingly, you know, there's a lot of people on the right. But there is that still half of America that is pushing back even on that. You know, what I'm saying is the same people that are wearing masks and going with COVID and anti-white are supporting the Ukraine at any cost. And so it is important that we develop a narrative not to bring these people over to our side, but to strengthen the ones that are already on our side. I just I think there's two Americas. There's no patching it back together. Balkanization is in the cards. As I mentioned, especially as cities become increasingly more hostile and infiltrated by the Third World. So it's important that we build our narratives and we keep in touch with each other. And we maintain, I think I like Richard Carey's words, and he said on his show today, we maintain a white culture, you know, a pro-white culture. And, you know, that could include some people of color, some brown people that are seeing things our way too, that don't like the way things are going. That can include them as well. It's going to be a little harder to get the right-wingers to push totally back on this war. Right-wingers tend to be in support of war, but I think I see many right-wing friends that last year supported Ukraine. This year they're like, you know, this is nonsense. We're wasting our money over there. And talking about the corruption of the Ukrainian government. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at. We've got a lot of articles, too. Do you have some thoughts on what I just said, or do you want to get right into some of this content?
Well, okay, one last thought would be that the you mentioned that the mask wearers are also the people who go in for the anti-white narratives. They're probably also the people who are celebrating Pride Month. They're celebrating. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And a bunch of other things. There's kind of a package. It's kind of a package deal. And they get this, you know, a prepackaged narrative. And the people who don't go along with it get kind of a what a lot of people call the the controlled opposition narrative, which is pretty fake. But some of the controlled opposition narrative might be, we're totally cool with gay marriage and adult trannyism. But we just got to draw the line at fourth graders, you know. We have to draw the line there at fourth grade. You can't be pushing this stuff on fourth graders, and you know, a lot of other things. We can't be having this insane war against Russia. We have to have this insane war against China. You know, you get this type of stuff, and you know the. What we do with RBN, what other people do, is try to establish a genuine opposition narrative. You know, with CRT, I mean, CRT, the official controlled narrative is that it's not about white people. In fact, black people are the biggest victims of CRT because of whatever, but somehow black people are the biggest victims of it. And you'll also hear things like, and this isn't exactly a controlled opposition. Well, maybe some people might say it is, but there is a narrative out there that, yeah, okay, well, the United States government and the big universities and the media are dominated by people, largely by people with Jewish last names, but actually these are fake Jews who drink children's blood and worship Satan, and they make all Jews look bad. Therefore, the typical regular Jew who isn't part of the elite, they're the biggest victims. You hear that too. So we're trying to, and it's hard because we are suppressed, and so developing narratives and propagating them are difficult because we're suppressed. We get our YouTube channels, we get our various channels taken away, we get our any means of supporting ourselves, of supporting our work financially, that gets taken away. We're lucky that RBN is still able to take money. We don't get money for creating these broadcasts, but at least we have a platform that RBN provides us for getting our word out. So that's what I had to say.
And this narrative of the CRT being, you know, not anti-white, that's collapsing. And I wanted to direct you to this townhall.com article. I want to give the guys at Fash the Nation credit for turning me on to this. I listened to their broadcast just today. And I guess they did it last week sometime. Mike Jazz and Warren did an excellent broadcast. So I want to give them credit for this content, but I don't want to rip off their takes. I don't know, Patrick, did you happen to listen to that particular episode, the last episode?
No.
Of FTN?
Nope. Did not listen to it.
So good. We're going to get a legit visceral react from you. This from townhall.com. Ed Brodo is the opinion writer here. And it basically is making the case that the CRT narrative is anti-white. And so they're trying to get ahead of this before it gets out of control. And this is just proof that what we do here and what many other content creators have done that are pro-white is that we have made these people talk about this narrative being anti-white. All right, so it starts off, the United States is the best country human beings have ever devised. We're not perfect, but we are a nation that continues to redefine itself as required by the times. It's a work in progress that always seeks to correct its deficiencies. In the 1950s, we were plagued with an evil known as McCarthyism. The allegation was the communists were infiltrating the federal government. Read that, Jews, by the way. Thousands of Americans lost their jobs and went to prison because someone called them pinko. The victims of McCarthyism was on the left. Then he goes on to say, today we are faced with a comparable plague called woke. To be woke is to accept that America is a racist country suffering from white supremacy and systemic racism. This time the victims are on the right, conservatives, Republicans, and white people. So they actually said white people are the victims in this. And again, the only reason I'm saying this is because our narrative is being pushed out there and they're having to deal with this. All right. He goes on to write, calling someone a racist is the equivalent of calling them a pico, pinko meaning communist. You can lose your ability to earn a living. The majority of Americans do not bow to the woke monster. The actual number of woke people remains small, according to Scott McConnell and the American Conservative. Perhaps 6% of the population, according to Pew surveys of American political attitudes. Their influence should not be underestimated. He goes on to say that woke ideology accuses all whites of oppressing everyone else. Hating white people has become an epidemic. That's an interesting statement right there. Hating white people has become an epidemic. Whites are demonized, marginalized, stereotyped, denigrated, and suppressed by government, media, academia, Hollywood, and corporate America. Many gullible whites enable this exclusionary mindset. Before it can stop, the disease must be diagnosed and called out for what it is, racism. Interesting so far, what we've read here, and the fact that they're having to admit that this is an anti-white narrative. And of course, they're going to get on the other side of it and try to head it off at the pass before it goes somewhere they don't want it to go. But just in those first few paragraphs, how interesting that this mainstream article is admitting. Let me get this real back on the other side.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
People are getting stupid, and now there's proof. I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. This year's spring edition of Intelligence Online reported on IQ tests of 18 to 60-year-olds. The online magazine has been doing this study for quite some time, and this year's report was the first time that the average IQ of Americans dropped. Usually, the average IQ went up 3 to 5 points every decade. This time it went down. Well, look at the age range, 18 to 60-year-olds. Anyone under 48 was educated entirely under the Federal Department of Education. Those who predate the Department of Education are aging out of the study. skewing the average. Do we really need any more evidence that government, especially the federal government, should not be involved in educating our young people? Instead of critical thinking, young people are being taught sexuality. Logic and reason have become political correctness. History is now critical race theory. This is starting to look a lot like the plot from the movie Idiocracy. And if you own a firearm, then you need carry insurance. Get the most affordable carry insurance on the market and save another 10% by using code LIGHTHOUSE at protectwithbear.com. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Cibus Pashem, Parabellum.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Back to the Patrick and Jeremy show, just dissecting and analyzing this article from Town Hall about anti-white racism, believe it or not. And, you know, in the past, we've been able to monitor Rush Limbaugh, which was my job. And it was a thankless job, by the way. And also Tucker Carlson, because we monitored them. Not to gain some sort of truth, but to monitor what the extreme right is talking about, because their job was to talk about that and head us off the pass before the populace went somewhere that they didn't want them to go. But now there's no need in monitoring these people with the untimely death of Rush and Tucker being basically fired. Now some of these talking points, all of them actually, are pushing out into the mainstream, and they're having to deal with this. Let me get your react, Patrick, to what we've read so far in this article. I see you're not on mute.
Sorry about that. You know how these things are. You know how these things are. I was raised during the pre- education department era, so I don't know about mute buttons. But at any rate, so what we hear from that article so far was largely an accurate description, although was Senator Joseph McCarthy the pure evil that was, you know, being alluded to?
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff like that in this article. There's a lot of subversive stuff. So they're presupposing the premise that McCarthy was evil in seeking out communists, quote unquote. Really, it was seeking out Jews.
Well, I mean, there was such an overlap. And, you know, on the one hand, if you've got freedom of thought and freedom of speech, I mean, we had laws banning communists from entering the United States, and Pablo Picasso, for one, wasn't able to get into the United States because of that. But on the other hand, communism as an idea was never illegal, or like, I mean, it's constitutionally protected. So, but the, you know, the thing is, the people that the House Un-American, or I guess it would have been the Senate Un-American Affairs Committee, because McCarthy was a senator, it wasn't. It was more than a witch hunt. There was something there, and it's not my biggest area of expertise, but there was something there. I mean, the people that were the State Department did have a lot of communists or communist sympathizers in it. Was it fair to see who they were and what they were doing? Maybe it was fair to see who they were and what they were doing. But you know, was blacklisting and other things, where all the was everything that happened around it fair and correct? Maybe not. So I'm not going to come down. I can't do a deep dive into the McCarthyism, because I haven't done enough study of it. But I do think it's unfair to raise this as an example of, you know, one of the pure evils that America has overcome.
And so the you know, the McCarthyism, the seeking after communists, I mean, the Jews that infiltrated our society are largely in the 50s and 60s, you know, were communists. But then you had a faction of them that formed the neocon movement, and they supported publications like National Review. That was the Buckley one. Who was it? It was one of the guys that was part of the New American Century, that could be. I think his father could have been credited with the neocon movement. Help me with the name, Patrick. I just tried to look it up, and I'm drawing a blank here.
Right. Well, a couple that you'd have. One would be Irving Kristol. So the Irving Kristol, the father of William Kristol. And then John Potteritz's father. I guess Potteritz had a lower role in it. Kristol was actually one of the two founders of the Project for New American Century, along with Victoria Nuland's husband, Robert Kagan. I think they were the two founders. You had John Potteritz. I forgot his father, Norman Potteritz, who was also a big deal Trotskyite, along with Irving Kristol, big deal Trotskyite back in the day, who then became founders of the neocon intellectual movement.
So the point that I was making on that is, in this heated search for communists, you had this faction of Jews that formed a what would, you know, apparently be a right-wing movement, the neocons, I guess, to sort of shield themselves from that radar and form a subversive movement on the right that would be pro-war, right, and still adhere to some of the values of the right wing. So up on the next break, we'll do some more analysis of this article on the other side and take some calls if you guys want to weigh in.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Your Tuesday night broadcast on RBN. And so we were just analyzing this town hall article, and some of the subversive things in it was they compared the communist hunt to the anti-white narrative. And, you know, they're supposing that that hunt was evil. But really, it was Jewish communists that infiltrated. And we were just talking about how under Billy Crystal, started the Weekly Standard, the neocon publication, late 60s, early 70s, how the Jews sort of flew under the radar on that one and were able to, the Trotskyites, basically, that came over from Russia, were able to infiltrate the right wing. So that's one of the big subversive things in the article that goes along with many of the good things that it says. And the only reason it's saying good things is because they have to. They're having to get out in front of this. That's kind of where we're at. Do you have a few more thoughts on that?
Well, the other, I guess in the first paragraph or so of the article, the other statement was that the United States, while, you know, it was founded with deep flaws, at least it's always tried to make itself better, you know, something along those lines. And you do hear this a lot. It's the type of thing that Tucker Carlson would always say. And, what society at any time in history, anywhere in the earth, didn't have deep flaws? So why is that even something that you have to put out there? Humans are imperfect, right? Humans are sinners. We are very imperfect people. And when you put that out there, when you say, well, we had deep flaws, and what are the deep flaws? Everybody's immediately going to go to slavery. But it's not as if the people in the United States had invented slavery. Slavery was an institution with a history and even a prehistory, because, the dawn of history, some of the earliest writings, like the Code of Hammurabi, which is the earliest written law code that I'm aware of, it regulates slavery. So you've had slavery for longer than you've had written history, that's for sure, and it's been all over the world. It's not as if that was some sort of a American institution. But what are people going to think of? They're going to think of, okay, yeah, we were imperfect, but we've had the anti-slavery movement. We've had the women's rights movement. We've had the civil rights movement, which is kind of the second founding of the United States. And Martin Luther King is the godfather of the United States. And then of course, the gay rights movement would be kind of the natural next step along that line. And so it invites a celebration of things that, honestly, there's a lot of these things were mixed bags. A lot of these things were mixed bags, and shouldn't just be blindly accepted as perfecting what the founding fathers imperfectly had laid out.
It's really two things going on there that are subversive, and then we'll go to our call. Two things going on that are subversive. It's a backhanded compliment, a backhand with spikes on the back of the hand, by the way, to white people, because the article gives white people credit for developing this civilization and maintaining it. That's what's the interesting thing as you go on and read. But they're also saying, as you pointed out, well, you know, amidst all their flaws. And so, in other words, white people developed a civilization, but they were flawed. And then they did stuff to correct the flaws, which was get rid of slavery and do all of these, movements in the 60s for civil rights. So, in other words, painting that as a good thing when actually it was the demise of white culture. So, yeah, two very subversive things going on there. Great analysis. Do you have more?
And the article continues. Are we going to hear the rest of the article, or just is that not relevant?
Oh no, I want to pick apart the whole thing. But we do got Dan waiting on the line. If you want to give some more thoughts on that, and then maybe go to Dan, then we'll go on with the article.
No, you can move on to Dan or the however you want to do it.
Yeah, because we got this show in the next to completely take this apart. Dan in Washington, you're up. Hey, Dan, do we have you?
Hear me okay? There you are.
Nope.
I had a little issue. I kind of disagree with you, Jeremy, and then I had a question for Patrick about, but I think the bulk, I disagree that the balkanization has anything to do with conservative or liberal or left or right or red or blue. It's 100% racial. From what I see. So, you know, the red, blue, conservative, left, right paradigm was designed to divide white people, specifically divide and conquer, in my view. So they've engineered all these separate issues to try to divide the white people 50-50. And that's really all it is. I mean, red state, blue state, none of that really matters. It's all racial. You know, from what I see out west, the white people moving to Idaho and stuff like that, it's just racial. So, you know, and city, no, rural, I what I mean?
I actually would agree with that. And we saw, you know, during the Trump campaign in 16, white people that were traditionally Democrats or pro-worker, you know, came over to the vote for Trump. And, you know, as the left got considerably more like degenerate. And so I think you will see an even further shift when violence from these cities hits the rural areas. You're going to probably see white liberals who have moved out of that come onto our side as well. You're going to see that kind of balkanization. I would agree. It is racial. It's almost like a situation in prison.
I think
there's an overlap here, but white people, to a very large extent, have been divided. You have a fair-sized minority of whites who are all in with blue hair and yard signs celebrating, you know, mass immigration and trannyism and all this stuff. There's an awful lot of people who have bought into it and will have a hard time let going of it, because it, you know, the, for instance, just masks. The longer you've worn, if you've worn a mask for the past 3 years, it's really, really hard to say, gosh, I was wrong. People are not good at admitting they're wrong. And
right.
So I think I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how there's going to be balkanization or something. I don't see our current political structures as being sustainable. I don't know what's going to happen to them. But there are an awful lot of white people who have pretty explicitly taken an anti-white side, and I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't envy them. That's for sure.
Well, see, like, there's an issue like abortion. I kind of agree with what Jeremy's saying is as things get worse. If the thing is, no one's sticking up for white people, right? So the Republicans aren't openly sticking up for white people. But a lot of those women with blue hair and stuff, if you actually would just stick up for white people, they would probably go along with it. They just don't want Social Security privatized or whatever the Republicans are trying to do. So that they have it divided very evenly, but neither side right now is just sticking up for white people openly.
Here's the thing about those white people that are, you know, doing the blue hair and the whole anti-white thing and the whole pro third world immigration, they're going to be the first ones down because, you know, when the third worlders and the brown people turn violent, and they will, they're not going to care that white people, they're not going to care about white people who supported them. They're not going to care about any of that. It's just going to be a thing where it's white people are bad. We don't care, you know, who you are, what you supported.
Yeah, they were talking about that on that. I don't know if it was, I think I heard that was the Fascination, but, or maybe it was the Last Strike in Mike, where they played the clip from these women in San Francisco. You know, they had like a town hall and they were all really getting mad that they weren't enforcing any laws, you know, and people were just homeless people sleeping on the yard and all this stuff. And the city manager was like a black guy talking about, you know, white privilege and stuff. And you could see how these white, what's, like you said, once it starts affecting them, they're going to, some of them are actually more racially aware than, you know, your conservative out there on his farm or whatever, you know.
And so, I'll use South Africa as another example. You know, when the blacks were released by the government to take the farms from the whites, they didn't care if the farmers were against apartheid. Most of them were. Most of the white people in South Africa were against apartheid and supported the black communist government. But it didn't matter when it came time to take the land and harm white people. That's what happened, regardless of what lines that the political lines that the white people were on.
Yeah, I agree. And that's if you took a poll of all white people, you know, they'd probably agree on 80% of the issues. You know, it's just the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats are anti-white. Now they're actually being open about it, and some of them might start waking up. But the Republicans play us like they're always hinting that somehow they're more pro-white, but they're not. You know, they'll just stab you in the back even worse half the time. So, you know, again, it's just it's designed to divide white people to make the white community weak and not ever just stick up for white people, as far as I can tell. But as things balkanize, people are going to realize that more. I think that's kind of what's happening. But my question with Patrick, Roy Cohen was Trump's kind of mentor, and he was actually the lawyer to Joseph McCarthy. So I've always had the theory that that whole McCarthy thing was just kind of a gay op by Jews to get people not to talk about Jews. Because if you look at Charles Lindbergh and World War II, people were openly talking about Jews before World War II and then after World War II. And by the way, in World War II, we supported the communists against fascists. So I think people were still talking about Jews, so they just kind of came up with this hype, anti-communist hype. And Ray Cohen was that McCarthy guy's lawyer, and I think he kind of engineered it all, you know?
Roy Cohn, you're talking about Roy Cohn.
Yep. He was actually the lawyer, chief advisor, whatever, to Joseph McCarthy.
Yeah, he was on the committee's legal staff, and then he had a very close relationship with J. Edgar Hoover, and he was friends with Fred Trump and knew the young Donald Trump. He's an interesting enough character to look into. I haven't done a deep dive into Roy Cohn either. He's Jewish, and I assume he was a homosexual. I'm not sure. I think he was, wasn't he?
Not sure. Him or Arthur Finkelstein, they're always talking.
Yeah, I'm not, but, I'm
well,
not
one
sure.
of them died of AIDS, right? Him or Arthur Finkelstein died of AIDS or whatever. But Arthur Finkelstein created the whole left-right issue we're focused on today, you know, the Southern strategy.
He didn't create the whole... He was somebody who promoted negative campaigning. It's not as if that was really that original or unique. You can go back into the 1800s, look at the presidential campaigns of Andrew Jackson, and look at all the negative campaigning that was going on then. I mean, there was massive negative campaigning. I guess Finkelstein, maybe he developed some techniques that were more relevant to the electronic age. I think his importance can easily be exaggerated.
I noticed the Art Cavett show. You know, I was watching some rerun from the Art Cavett show in like 1971 or something. But you could also see how he even. Shows like that, they would say, oh, are you like one of these hippies on the college campus, you know, and then the other guy would be like, no, I'm for the Vietnam War, and they were just, it was kind of pushed from the top down, in a sense. No difference than the woke stuff today, it's just, I mean, you know, call it, like Rush Limbaugh made fun of liberals, now they got the woke word, but both sides are basically ran by Jews. You know what I mean?
Well, one of the things I do remember about McCarthy, I read a biography of Richard Nixon back when he was still president. It was a rather negative biography that was written about him, and I picked it up one summer to read during the Watergate hearings. Yeah, I picked it up. It was like, you know, 25 cents at a used bookstore or something. And Nixon had been on McCarthy's committee. He was a senator at the time, at least during the first couple of years of the committee, first year or two. And you know, we know from Nixon's, you know, the tapes that he recorded when he was in the White House, his conversations with Billy Graham and whatnot. Nixon was somebody who was really, really suspicious of Jews. Even, you know, even as he had Jews in his cabinet, people like Henry Kissinger, James Schlesinger, people like that. But he was somebody who had a lot of suspicion of Jews. He had, I guess, H.R. Haldeman had to draw up a list of all the Jews in the administration because Nixon... Maybe he didn't have the best Judar, and he wanted to find out how many Jews were in his administration. And so I don't know if the McCarthy and Nixon was it was said in that biography that Nixon was saved from the same kind of fate that that McCarthy had, where McCarthy wound up being in total disgrace and then died like 6 months later of cancer. But Nixon was saved from it by being selected as Dwight D. Eisenhower's running mate in 1952, and so he was no longer in the Senate when the committee fell into disrepute. But you know, I don't know if the committee was trying to sidetrack people's attention away from Jewish power by calling it communist or. You know, I don't know if that's really fair to say or not. I don't have enough background in the committee, but what was happening after World War II was there's this massive wave of sympathy that was generated, not necessarily immediately, but around the Holocaust. And, you know, I'm not saying not necessarily immediately because the Holocaust hadn't happened yet. It's a joke I like to say. The Holocaust hadn't happened yet. It didn't happen until, you know, months later. But, but you know, the narrative was starting, and there was a lot of sympathy. There were a lot of Jewish refugees. There were a lot of Jewish refugees. And so people, there was sympathy for Jews that had been generated in the wake of World War II, and that was exploited.
Yeah, the McCarthy thing is kind of just another way they exploit it too, right? It's almost like they created their own victimhood in a sense. After they created the Bolshevik Revolution and killed like 20 million people, then they can sit there for decades talking about, oh, it was so horrible in the McCarthy era.
And in a lot of ways, if you're talking the McCarthy era, you're talking about when were the years that committee was active? Maybe like 1951 to 53 or 50 to 53. I don't know how long it went on for. But in a lot of ways, that's kind of the heyday of America. That's almost, you know, by some measures, that is the pinnacle of American society, right? This is 1954 is Brown versus the Board of Education, which is one of the, you know, major turning points of American society, which, you know, you can later on look back at and say, okay, well, this is where things started going off the rails. The 1965 Immigration Act, we look at that a lot, but, you know, and you know, you could make the argument that a lot of things were going off the rails before that, and you could probably make the argument that things were never really even on the rails. But by some measures, I mean, life was really good in the early 50s.
I see when I go back and watch some of that old show, I just think it. I used to like it, but I hate it now because they're like gloating. The Jews are gloating. You had all these like Jewish comedians, all these black and white shows with the like George Burns. You can just tell they're on top of the world. You know, they're just like, thanks, America. You know, we rule you now. You know, I mean, it's just they just seem like they're really gloating. And yeah, they immediately start with the guilt trip stuff, the demoralization. You know, Twilight Zone would have some show about the evil Nazi guy or racist bigot or whatever. So it's, yeah, from the beginning of the TV anyway, you know.
We got one more caller, Dan. Did you?
That's it. I know you agree with me mostly. A lot of people call Mike's show and some of the same people say, well, I'm not racist. They're also the ones that call up and say, there's going to be a civil war with this red versus blue. And it's just like, if they can't even stick up for their own race, like if the people that don't stick up for their own race, you'll see on TV and stuff that are this most hardcore about the red versus blue stuff, I think. But anyway, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Let's move on to our last caller, Rick in Arizona. Rick in Arizona, welcome.
Yeah. Well, we can pretty much say that if we lose our gun rights, we can't. RBN really wasn't a Second Amendment radio station. Joe Kennedy was behind McCarthy, and that probably attributed to some of JFK's assassination. There was a lot of reasons why the Jays wanted to get rid of him, but that was probably another one. But as far as the white race goes, you know, you have to take a look at the people just around you and how the people react around you if you ever talk about things. That's pretty much the whole country. I would say if you're lucky, if you could find, I don't know, even the people that are pissed off at the boomers, you know, I just don't see them unless they start starving to death. You know, I just don't see them latching on to anybody talking about these issues. it's all on the internet, but that's as far as it goes. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rick. And that's one of the points we're making with this town hall article, is that the mainstream is now having to talk about the anti-white narrative. It's no longer called CRT. Patrick.
People are really confused. Very few people know what's going on. It's just amazing. I really think that it's not just the people in at the bottom. I think people throughout society, even in the elite, are incredibly low info and confused about what's going on.
Well, and that's coming back full circle. That's why building a strong narrative and networking on this, you know, on RBN and other broadcasts like this, that's why it's so important, is when this thing does collapse, we need to corral these people, you know, into movements like the National Justice Party. Those guys are doing great work. They're hitting the streets, and you know, they're raising awareness of white issues. So,
hey,
go ahead, Patrick.
I don't know how many, if we have a minute or two left, but something that's interesting is it came across it yesterday. There are a few states, including West Virginia is one of them, that are disinvesting from BlackRock and maybe Vanguard as well, with their public pension funds. And that's actually a big deal. And, you know, if you're talking about doing things on the streets, another attack is boycotting. And there's things you can boycott as an individual. But when you start having disinvestment at the state level from a few of these so-called red states, that's a big deal. I just thought I'd throw it out there before the show ends. Maybe we can talk about it in the next show.
Let's pick that up on Patrick and Jeremy Part 2, 1 p.m. Central on the Bugle on RBN. Be there or be a 400-pound tranny faggot queer.
Gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop and lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop and lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.